kids to have a dream to open and run a bakery. But they took a chance, took the sweets to the street. Now they all have places where I'd love to eat.
Well, I remember this. Hello there, bakeroos and bakerettes. Welcome to the Rise Up Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Dick, and this is the show about bakers and bakeries and bakery owners and all the folks that work so hard, often through the night, to make the good stuff and share it with the people in their community. How are you this week? Happy New Year to you. Happy Ukrainian Christmas. It's good to be back for episode 180. Do you watch the darts? If you do, you'll get it. That's pretty cool. 180 episodes. It took a while to get to this one. Thank you to everyone that's reached out over the last couple of months to say, are you okay? Are you doing all right? There hasn't been an episode in a while. What's going on? I'm going to tell you all about that, actually. But before then, just you need to know, Anna Gordon is on the show this week. Anna is the owner of The Good Batch, which is a really awesome cookie bakery in Brooklyn. And we have an awesome conversation. We have one of these back and forth, up and down, go places that I didn't know that we were going to go to until we went there, kind of conversations that I love so much. And so that's coming up in a couple of minutes. But before we get to that, a couple of things. First off, where was I? I was around here. I was in Victoria. You know, I think I mentioned in the last show, I started a new job. I needed to get out of the house. As much as I enjoy, and I really do enjoy conversations with other bakers, I need to see people face to face. And so I got a job part-time at a local coffee shop in town where I do like baker prep and that kind of thing. You know, mixing scones and mixing cookies and making almond croissants and all of that kind of daytime makeup stuff that folks bake off then the next morning. And it's been good, but it's been a little bit hectic and trying to get used to a new schedule and not being in control of my calendar 100% for the first time in a very, very, very long time. It's been a little bit weird. And so it took a while to get used to that and figure things out and kind of get into a rhythm. And then we hit the holiday season and it's a lesson I learned years ago and I still have to relearn it every year. You're not going to get a hold of bakers for long conversations during the holiday season. And I totally get it. So, you know, I sent out some invitations and they're all coming back now. And so January's here and we're talking up a storm again, and there's going to be new episodes for the foreseeable future for sure. So yeah, so that's, I guess, the reason. Also went home to Saskatchewan over Christmas. To see my dad and to see Cindy's folks and a little bit of family there. Completely froze my butt off. Oh my God. It was a massive, massive cold snap. Like we were hitting, you know, minus 35 Celsius and minus 40 with the wind chills and it was just brutally cold. And then because of this is the world we live in, it went from brutally cold to freezing rain in one day. And we barely got out of Saskatchewan because that freezing rain kind of, it messed up all the runways at the airport. And so massive delays, but we made it back. I missed a couple days of my new work because of flight delays, but back and we're back in the rhythm. So I think we're kind of finding that right balance again, which is nice. What else to tell you? I have to give a couple of shout outs. I've already alluded to the folks that have emailed over the last while, just checking in, seeing how things are going. And I really do appreciate that. It really touches my heart that folks listen to the show enough that they miss it when it's not there. And so thank you to the folks that emailed and reached out. It kind of made my day every time I saw that. And then I got a little bit of guilt. Well, I'm glad that's over. I'm glad we're doing shows again. Also, I need to thank some folks for Christmas gifts. Yay. First off, like Leah Hayward, the amazing Leah Hayward up in Sydney, BC. Last year, she was in Norway, staging at some Norwegian bakeries, and she sent me a cookbook from the bakery that she was working in Norway. Well, she's back in Canada now, doing Scandinavian sweets and all kinds of lovely cookies and stuff that she's selling at pop-up markets and farmers markets in Sydney and southern Vancouver Island. And she came by with a lovely box of cookies just before Christmas, which we devoured before we went to Saskatchewan. And it was perfect in every way. She's got a delightful little box. They're pretty tiny, you know, normal-sized, dainty cookies, all kind of interesting Scandinavian flavors. And thank you, Leah. Boy, it really... we were really, really excited to both get the gift and eat them all. And then right after Christmas, when we got back from Saskatchewan, went down to the mailbox and there was a package there from Andrew Janjigian. Yeah. Who was on the show earlier this year. And Andrew is, when he was on the show, Andrew is Word Loaf on all the social medias and stuff. So if you don't know Andrew Janjigian, you certainly know Word Loaf. He did a collaboration with an artist and came up with a little booklet called The Bread Baker's Pocket Companion by Andrew. And the illustrations is Johanna Kindvall doing these lovely little, you know, pencil like line art things. And this booklet is amazing for home bakers or even bread bakers that need a reference. It's all of the like conversions from tablespoons to grams, temperature conversions, baker's math, how to convert back and forth, feeding routines for your sourdough, all that kind of, you know, little reference, the little handy reference that you're always in need of. I really find at the coffee shop because all of their recipes are all cups and spoons and that kind of thing that I was using Google a lot trying to convert to weight so I could weigh things out. And here it all is, just in your pocket. So thanks to Andrew. If you go search for Word Loaf, I know he's selling these, or there are also maybe giveaways for subscribers to his newsletter. It's well worth getting your hands on one. I think this was really cool, and I was very grateful to get it. And I've already taken it in to show the folks that I work with. I say, look at this, a really great idea, and it comes together really well. So check out Word Loaf. If you want to get your hands on one of these. Oh, hey, one more thing. With this newfound energy that I've got and figuring out my schedule a little bit more, I'm able to get back cracking with Bakers for Bakers. And I just want to mention that. If this is the first time you've heard about Bakers for Bakers, it's a website, it's a forum, it's an online community called bakersforbakers.org. That's bakers, the number four, bakers.org. It's where bakery owners and professional bakers get together, talk about their business, share information, focus on the business of baking and the craft of baking. And it's a kind, loving, supportive forum, intentionally. And I invite you to come join. There was a discussion a couple of weeks ago about subscriptions and, you know, subscription models, community-supported bakeries, that kind of thing. We're going to actually have a Zoom call about that on the 24th of January, and all the details are on Bakers for Bakers. So if you're interested in subscriptions, if you're doing it now and would like some advice or share some thoughts on what's working and what's not working, head over to Bakers for Bakers and check out that thread because I think it's going to be a really interesting call. And my intention is we're going to do more calls like that throughout the year, schedule permitting, topics permitting, that kind of thing. But that's what I'm trying to do this year. So if you haven't yet, head over to bakersforbakers.org. If you've signed up and haven't been there in a while, head back over. There's some really good conversations going on right now. Okay, that's all I'll say on that one. What else can I tell you? That's about it. We should get to the conversation. That's the good part. It was so nice to meet Anna. So Anna reached out to chat before Christmas, and we finally got together right after New Year's to have a conversation. And it's awesome. She's awesome. The Good Batch is a cookie shop, a bakery in Brooklyn, in Clifton Heights, I believe, in Brooklyn is what it's called, the neighborhood there. I always think of Brooklyn as like one place and being really tiny, but it's very distinct neighborhoods, and it's always bigger than I think anyways. But they've been doing the Good Batch for 15 years now, and it's quite a journey. And we talk about all of that, and we talk about where they've been and where she's going and life at the bakery. So let's get into it. Here it is, Anna Gordon from The Good Batch in Brooklyn, New York.
Welcome to my bakery basement.
That's awesome. That's how you know it's legit, right? When the office is like either down in the basement, or when I was in New York once, 4 or 5 years ago, I did an interview with Judith Norrell in Manhattan, and we sat by her mixer while somebody was using the mixer. Because that was, the mixer was sort of by the lockers, where, you know, and that kind of thing. Yeah,
that's where there was room.
Uh-huh. Yeah, no, that's totally how it works, for sure. For sure.
Yeah. So, I'm like very close to the earth in the basement here. I could not be more underground.
So is this the bakery in Brooklyn?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right on. Right on. I was reading about you a little bit, and like off your website and stuff, and I'm just amazed at the path you've been on. Cause like you started like in like flea markets and pop-ups and stuff with your cookies, eh? So what got you into that? Like why cookies? Why baking?
Yeah. I often ask myself what this fascination is, and it must have just been something I was born with, because when I went to undergrad university, I did not think I would be opening a bakery. And then when I moved to New York City, I kind of beelined to the city straight out of college, because it was New York City that drew me first, right, more than the baking fascination. And I arrived here, I got the good job that I was supposed to get. And I very quickly realized, oh goodness, I am not cut out for this office life. And what I found myself kind of craving and was gravitated toward was baking. And so I was just spending all my free time baking at home, and cookies is something I've always loved, but cookies were kind of just the calling, if you will. I mean, it sounds like bread was your calling, but cookies were mine, and I've just never really stepped away from it. So I just leaned into it until here we are, you know, 15 years later, and I have this little cookie world.
Yeah. Well, what was your degree in?
So I went to the University of Miami, and I double majored in literature and advertising with a minor in marketing. And they actually have all been quite useful. Uh-huh. Certainly, you know, English language, can't get enough education in that out in the world. And I do love reading. I'm a big reader. So that's kind of always stuck with me. And then the advertising and the marketing have certainly been played a part part of like the background of everything that I've done.
For sure.
Yeah.
Well, it's the difference between I really like making cookies and now here's the story that I'm going to tell about the cookies and get them out in the world. Right. Like that's a difference for folks, right? Yeah.
It's a totally different side of the brain. And I think, and just the communication, like being able to communicate both verbally and in person through email, telling a story through a newsletter, a website, trying to pitch a new idea, you know, it's really like compacting thing. And one of the most useful little nuggets that I think I took away from the communication degree is the idea that the simplest things are always the most complicated to like distill and communicate. And that grows across the board. I mean, that still rings true for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, I want to describe how we're different and unique, but I need to do it in a way that really, really hits other people. Right. And so you get too far in the weeds.
Totally. And you always, I try and practice, like if I'm writing something, I get it all out. I get all my thoughts out. And then I'm like, okay, we need to cut 3/4 of this. To just make it digestible and easy. And I would almost say the same for when I'm developing new recipes or flavors. It's like I have these big ideas, but then really you need to like cut about half of it out and to get it across.
so tell me about the, I guess for, with, well, you, maybe an artist metaphor might work, but like, tell me about the palette that you work with in the cookie world, like sort of what gets you sparking and dreaming when you're coming up with something new?
Sure. And it's evolved. That's definitely changed as I've gotten older and been more absorbed into the food scene. But right now, what excites me is playing with as much savory elements as possible. So I'm really drawn to a lot of herbs and spices and flavors that you would see maybe in like a chef's kitchen, savory world. So that excites me. And I'm also really inspired by drawing flavors from just cultures around me. Being in the center of New York City, there's nothing but variety of individuals and backgrounds. Even in my own kitchen, we're probably representing at least 8 different countries at any given time. So that's really exciting to me. And so that draws my attention. Also, just something that has been with me since the very beginning is from when I started the Good Batch, I've always been drawn to like drippy ganache and caramel and salty sweet, big fun flavors. I'm definitely not a dainty, delicate, that's not how I compose. Like I kind of go more on like the big heavy side.
Yeah.
So that's rang true this whole time. But I think the evolution right now in particular is I like bringing unexpected flavors into cookies. For starters. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, that's so neat. Yeah, well, and with the caramel and the ganache and stuff, then you can start thinking textures as well, right? Like,
totally. Yeah, textures are a big player.
Yeah. Okay, so straight right up front, total amateur when it comes to thinking cookie. But some friends of mine in Ontario put out a cookbook last year, and we actually started baking some of the recipes out of the cookbook, and they did a s'mores cookie, and it was like, okay, so we're going to try and capture the campfire, right? So it's got, toasted marshmallow on top. It's got a layer of potato chips in there for some odd reason. And then, a really decent base cookie with graham crackers and that kind of thing. And that was the first one that kind of got me. It was like, oh, I actually like the texture of the chips and then the gooiness of the marshmallow. And that, it kind of the layers of the thing, right? And it kind of got me. So I'd say for the first time in that sort of sweets realm, thinking textures in addition to flavor profiles and stuff. It was a neat experience,
Absolutely. Yeah. That speaks my language for sure, of layering flavors and textures. And our ice cream sandwiches, that's a big part of our menu. That it is exactly what you just said. It's layering textures and balancing the salty, the sweet. If you can get like an umami in there, even better, but just a crunch and a softness and the cold and the warm. It's all of that. I find is kind of like how I approach developing. Cool.
For sure. Oh, what fun. Mm-hmm. Well, and 15 years in, I'm assuming it, you haven't exhausted the well yet in terms of ideas. Yeah, it keeps on going. Good for you.
Apparently not. No.
Yeah. So I was thinking back to, you know, starting at the flea market kind of a thing and selling that way, sort of what's the journey been like for you to go and, you know, from a table at the market to your own place and to now like doing, you know, wholesale, doing some quantity as well.
Yeah. It's a good question. And it's, I appreciate that because I have to stop myself and ask, how does this affect me? You know, it's important to reflect back because I feel like we can get so caught up in where we are today and be like, wait a minute, we've really come a long way. So to answer your question, going back in the beginning, yeah, I had a little booth, a 10 by 10 pop-up tent and a 6-foot table at the Brooklyn Flea, right around the time the Brooklyn Flea was starting, 2010. And I would wheel over cookies in my little radio flyer wagon with jars clinking. And when I started there, that was the peak. That was, great. I was so excited to be there. And I felt so accomplished to be selling this craft that I had made to strangers. I mean, and when I got there, I was like, I've made it. This is what I wanted, this transaction of selling my cookies in an open market. And I was so happy. And then like any peak in business, you reach there and you're like, oh wait, there's a whole new level that I now need to get to. Right. And then the climb begins. So I started there and I'm still working at that point, a full-time job. I'm right. still working in an office and I'm baking at night and sleeping very little. And so from there, the next logical step was like, okay, how do I support myself to bake more? How do I support enough staff and team members that I can start growing? And so for a number of years, from about 2010 to 2013-14, I was just renting kitchen spaces around South Brooklyn and growing my team and experimenting and succeeding and failing and just trying different things. And then by 2014, we needed our own space. And we've built out this kitchen here in Clinton Hill. And we've really managed to fit a lot in here, as you were saying, the scale. And at this point now we're wholesaling upwards of about 200 different accounts. And our primary customer for our wholesale is what we call third wave coffee shops around New York City. So that's kind of higher end coffee doing interesting things, who care about serving a high quality, unique pastry and food gotcha. Program to yeah. their customers. Yeah. So that's who we've really kind of like tapped into. And so that's a 7-day a week operation.
Wow.
And then also 7 days a week, we have our flagship bake shop here in Clinton Hill. And that's really fun because then we get to do more kind of like experimental specials. And then in the summer, we're selling our ice cream sandwiches we're still working with the Brooklyn Flea, which has now become Smorgasburg. And so we sell there and we sell to the concert, some various concert series around New York City, which is really fun because I also love music. And it's a nice way to join those two passions together. And we're always looking for new opportunities to sell. I mean, with cookies that you... I guess in any baked good and bread, you know, that you have to just kind of be nimble and creative of like, how do I grow? How far can I reach without, while maintaining a happy lifestyle and quality of product, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's fascinating to me because it sounds like it didn't take you too long before it's like, okay, I need a team here to fulfill that sort of to get me out of the office, to get me out of the cubicle.
Yeah.
It's going to be a team to help me do that.
We're going to need more people. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I've talked with folks that sort of like are specifically trying to design sort of a one person shop. Like I'm the artisan, I'm going to set it up just for me. And if I can make it run on my, by myself, it's fine, right? And then I've talked with other folks that it's like, on day one, I need 35 people here and we're going to Whole Foods, right? You know, like that kind of a thing.
Right.
And it sounds like you're like, okay, certainly in the middle of that, it's like, it's not going to take me too long with no sleep before phase two is going to have some people involved, right?
Yeah, those are the two ends of the spectrum I've definitely seen. And I think because I started this really young and naive, I was like 25 when I started this, I was really willing to work very hard, very early on. And like, I was just grinding for a couple years there. And then, but in order to do what I needed to get to at least, to be able to do this full time, because that was then the goal. The first goal was sell cookies to people that aren't my friends and family, direct contact. And then I think the next goal was to do it full time. And I knew that I couldn't do that alone. It just wasn't possible. And I think since then I've really adopted and maintained that a boundary that I've had to set is if I'm going to do this, I have to have a happy life. I have to have time away from here. I have to have other goals that aren't necessarily business oriented. And I also need to make sure that my team that works for me has those same things as well.
Yeah.
And it also helped that my husband eventually came on board and is now part of the business full time. And he's like adamant about that. Like he's not a baker. So he's like, I will not be working that hard. And like, it's just not necessary. So let's figure out a way to find the balance for everyone involved in this business.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like that you stressed everyone, you know, it's that thing where, you know, if one person gets sick or one person has to go away for a couple of days or whatever, it's like, you know, you not only do you stay open, but you can actually like, it'll work, you know,
it'll work.
Yeah.
It gets a little shaky sometimes, but it'll work.
Sure. Yeah. Oh yeah.
We can't control everything, but no, for sure. I mean, quality of life is so important. You know, we've come this far. We're doing this thing that we really love and it's, you know, we're building it from scratch. So we might as well go that extra distance to try and enjoy ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm curious about Brooklyn and sort of the place where you're doing your work. It really seems to me like it's the kind of place that would embrace and support what you're doing, right? You know, it's kind of it's that high end with the taste of home. It's something different, you know, and there's the people there, both from a team perspective and from a customer perspective. I guess that's sort of my assumption. You know, how's it been sort of building a team over the years and attracting people to come and work with you?
Yeah. I mean, listen, it's constant. Like I'm not, I don't have the final answer. I feel like I'm every year I kind of reflect and tweak about how I do that and what is team building and what is leadership. I don't think I'll ever stop working on that answer.
Sure,
but where I am right now, I can say I personally really like building a team that has a lot of diversity in it. I find that to be really helpful and really interesting. Both of back, like where people are from on the one hand, but also just diversity in experience. I find that I really enjoy bringing people in who might not have vast baking experience, because then I can teach them what baking at the Good Batch is, right? And like what being a part of a team at the Good Batch is. I'm sure you've experienced this yourself or talked to others where you can bring in people with a lot of experience and it might not click because they're bringing in
totally
lots of their own experience and that might clash with what you have and it's hard to undo. And it's not to say, listen, it's not to say I'm against hiring people who have extensive baking experience. I still am. And they're amazing. And it's so helpful because I if anything, I love learning from what other people can bring. Like, I'm open to that. But I think having just diversity on the team is so helpful, and I think other people appreciate it too. And it also then reflects who we're serving, like who our customers are, and our community is just as diverse.
Yeah, absolutely.
That just feels right.
It took me a while with the experience thing. I think at the first couple of years, it was just pure like lack of self-confidence on my own part. So if I hired someone with experience, I was intimidated. And then I finally got into the rhythm. I got into was like, okay, if someone's, you know, got different experiences, give me a month, learn our systems, and then we can start talking about how do I make it better? What do we add? What do we take away? That kind of thing. You know, so I got more comfortable being open to ideas, but it's like, first understand how we do things, warts and all, you know, like, and with all of the crazy things that we invented because we didn't know any better. And then now let's start tuning. And that worked, you know, but it took a while.
It takes a minute. Yeah. And also as the owner, the warts and all, especially is like you have to hold that confidence. Even if you're like, I might change this eventually, you have to just be like, this is how we're doing this. Mm-hmm. I own that. You know, I take responsibility for that. Give me a month and then I'll take your input, and it may or may not find a way in here, but like you have to, as an owner, you really have to hold that confidence. Confidence, my goodness, is like a secret ingredient, right? Even if you're faking it, you have to hold on to it, because then things can crumble for sure.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And it seems like, I don't know. You've alluded to, you know, things that didn't work over time, but by and large, I think if you step back enough, the arc is going in the right direction for you, for sure.
We're moving in the right direction. Yeah. I mean, you know, zoom in and we've got stories, but that's like, you know, I think failure, if we can call it that, is so important to building a career. I mean, how else do we know what not to do? You know, we can see other people fail, and that's certainly helpful. We can see other people make mistakes, but until you do it yourself, you're never really going to know if something isn't going to work.
And hopefully it's things that, you know, 2 years later you laugh about rather than cry about, but that's,
Yeah. Don't let it sink you. But we took a space across the street from our Brooklyn bakery. We took a lease and we first opened a sandwich shop, and then we eventually converted it into an ice cream shop. And then eventually we let go of the lease. To no fault of our own, the building had this just awful, deep rooted, like historical leak that was so deep. I mean, Mark, it involved like every landlord on the block was fighting over where it came, and it was just a disaster. And we were able to kind of just like tiptoe away from the whole thing, which was kind of a blessing that we didn't have to get involved. But I bring it up to say the lessons that we learned from that whole experience, from the two businesses that we ended up having there, I'm so grateful to have those under my belt now as we look to expand in other directions. Of like, it revealed so much about ourselves as how we want to run a business, how we don't want to run a business, like things that we assume are easy and my God, they're not, or vice versa. So it was just, I find that so useful, and I'm glad we were able to kind of survive it and get through it without it really cracking too much in the core of our business. But I think a smart business owner is really paying attention and trying to stay as humble as possible when things don't go right.
Totally. Well, and keep the business healthy and going, and keep your relationships healthy and going too, right? Like that's when you're working with your partner on this stuff and things aren't going well, that can get dicey as well if you internalize it too much, you know.
Absolutely. Or that,
speaking for my own experience, I guess.
No, for sure. You know? I agree. Yeah. Taking things personally or blaming. Blaming and not, and can be a dangerous road to go down.
We used to with our bakery, it was my wife and I that ran it, and we were both baking like full shifts as well, and we lived no more than about a 5-minute drive from the bakery, and we always called those the board beatings, as you know, we'd climb in the car and we'd be frustrated with something, or something wasn't working, and usually by the time we got down past the street and back to our house, I was like, okay, yeah, I think we have a plan. I think we're okay.
That's impressive.
And then if it was really bad, but then we would take a walk around the lake and we'd figure it out, you know. But it was and when things got bad, we were taking a lot of walks. You know, when we had a really tough problem, but it was
fresh air. Helped solve a lot of.
But I think that was the
problem.
That was the beautiful thing for me from contrasting with working in the corporate world, where every decision took months and dozens of people, it seemed, to get anything done. That on a 5-minute drive, we could say, okay, well, yeah, I think this is really the problem. Let's try this. And you kind of have a plan, you know? So that's, I guess, for me still, that's the appeal of doing my own thing, is that you can make those decisions relatively quickly.
The nimbleness is really great. Although I've found, first of all, I love that and I completely relate to it. And I love the vision of you guys walking around the lake. I walk a lot on my own as a way to process. It's definitely a strategy of mine, but I've also found that the quick decision-making, it can be a little dangerous sometimes if it's made kind of in a vacuum, and even I've had to set up, my husband and I have kind of had to set up parameters where I can't make decisions quickly by myself, because they'll lead to bigger, you know, that like I'm just like setting a fissure that will ultimately crack things open because I thought it was the right thing to do. Or, you know, if we have to make a decision, we really try and line it up with the goals that we've set, and you know we're big goal setters. This far into the business, it's like the lifeline. So making quick decisions is definitely a benefit, but also you have to be careful, or like I have to be careful not to set us off in something that like sets us in the wrong direction, and you know you get 2 weeks down, you're like, oh man, we need to back up. And that was back up.
Yeah. In a lot of cases with me, it was the discussions were an awful lot around, how am I going to have this conversation to make it a good conversation? If that makes sense, right? Like whether it was with an employee or especially with our landlord, who I found extremely frustrating, or with a supplier or something, it's like, okay, how am I going to position this thing? Because I'm really frustrated, I'm also, it's quite likely my fault. so coming in all guns blazing is not going to work here.
It's an important role. I love that. So you do kind of like a pep talk. Love the pep talk, to prepare for a meeting. And I also find that taking ownership of an issue, of a problem, that helps me a lot of not, it helps me from getting, like I was saying, blaming. You know, ultimately every mistake that is made in this business eventually, you know, can be trickled back to me not taking ownership and preventing it from happening in the first place. I mean, there's obviously exceptions that are just egregiously wrong, but I think having that mentality of the ownership, and then it helps going into a conversation.
Oh, like, absolutely. Oh yeah.
You know, I have stake in this game too.
I'm curious, who are your mentors sort of in this? Do you have your people that you can lean on when you need them?
It's a tricky question because, and it's a good question. The answer is I don't have a mentor in the very probably traditional sense of someone that's, let's say, older than me who has gone down this path, this very specific path that I'm on, that I can reference when I have a specific problem, you know?
Yeah.
So that I have yet to find. I'm always keeping an eye open, but I don't have that. There's certainly people out there that I'd love to loop into my network, but I've never had a traditional quote unquote mentor of that status. What I have instead, and I'm so grateful for, is more of a network of other business owning friends or pastry chef, baker friends. So within that, I've kind of created this community that is so supportive, and in many ways we're like direct competitors, but on the other hand, we're all in it, you know, we're all working toward the same goal, and there's no contrast there. So I'd say that is more what I have as a support system. Which is incredible, and I'm so grateful for. And it's taken, you know, years and years to build. It hasn't come overnight. But that's more what we have here.
Right on. Yeah, and that's a better way of framing it, actually. To be honest, because that's exactly where I was kind of heading. Because there's so many things that you're learning as you go, and it's like, especially over the, you know, 15 years, like it's been for you, it's like you can't invent it all by yourself. And it's nice to have somebody to bounce ideas off of and that kind of a thing. Yeah.
Absolutely.
You know, there's a group here in Victoria that's started up a group more of restaurant owners and coffee shop owners. They call themselves the Bread and Butter Collective. And they just basically said, like, we all, Victoria, it's got to be much like Brooklyn. It's like we compete, but honestly, it's like if we're all doing well, then the whole industry is doing well. And these are like industry level problems, and we're not going to solve them on our own. So they get together and they try and figure stuff out, whether it's, you know, dealing with the pandemic or, you know, takeout packaging is a big deal for a lot of them, and sustainable takeout packaging and stuff. And so they started putting their heads together about that. But, you know, yeah, it's interesting. It's like you pick up your teachers and along the way, and then you become one in certain situations. Yeah. It's like, oh yeah, I've messed that up. I can tell you all about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
No, and I love it. I love any opportunity to kind of like pass information along that I've learned. But yeah, no, it's like all ships will rise, right? I think if we're all helping each other out and sharing information, whether it's like a plumber or this is how I solved this new legislation that's passed, that's enforcing some packaging rule. I think, you know, it takes away from the loneliness that can often be running a business, you know, kind of like at the end of the day, we're really on our own, but it helps to have that community, and it's certainly more fun and exciting. And then we can cheer each other on.
Earlier, when you were talking about sort of the wholesale work that you're doing, sort of the coffee shops that you have relationships with and the other events and that, it kind of got me thinking about, that your bakery becomes a bit of a platform for you to do good in other areas that are important to you. And you know, you mentioned music as one. It's like, hey, I can actually participate in the music scene through my bakery. And I'm really curious about that. If you're feeling that, yeah, I've got this thing now in this business that I can use for whatever your definition of good in the world is.
Yeah. yeah, the voice and the platform. Certainly. And yeah, and it's something that I'm actually kind of looking forward to exploring more, because it's hard to think about it, you know, I feel like at times I've been bogged down by the day to day. And so it's nice to have moments, to come up and think about, okay, what can we contribute now? And at the Good Batch, one of our values is community. And, you know, just on a day to day basis. And I'm pretty sure every bakery owner that you've talked to is the same way. It's like, you know, we're here, we're what we create spreads joy. It's, you know, it's a little bit of happy, accessible nourishment to anyone that comes through the door. Like all of that. That's just like a standard contribution of good that all bakers are participants in. And so that feels great. Like as just like a start. But I think you know, there's a lot that I want to contribute to. And just on the one hand, or like on one thing, my having this platform, it's certainly fun to connect with other, like I was saying, be part of a network. I feel like that's contributing to a good thing of supporting other businesses, being there for other businesses if they need it, and just being part of the New York City food scene is amazing. I mean, that, you know, and just like having any little like extra access to that is really fun. And then, you know, going back to community is finding ways, and this is something that we're a bit limited because our shop is actually quite small. And in the past, we've hosted children event for children and holiday things, which is really fun, but it's also just it's especially in this like post COVID world, I'm like, it's really tight in here, and I don't know how many people we want to cram in here, .. So we're definitely looking at opportunities to create like quite literally bigger spaces to bring people together, for that, you know, that can maybe contribute to a local nonprofit or organization. That's for sure. That's something that we're looking at. And then also, you know, to contribute toward good is something that I'm really excited about continuing to explore is finding ways to create cookies, to create food that reminds people of home.
Right.
Wherever home is. I think that's a really nice contribution that I can make in my community. And I've been doing that, but like certainly looking more into that.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, and that's the thing is, again, I really got to work on my scripts, but yeah, you mentioned platform and that's exactly where I was headed. It's like, you've got the platform that you can do.
Yeah.
That you can go in the directions that you want to go in. Right. And so
And also like, you know, as an individual, I have to also be very clear about like how much of my personal voice do I want to bring and or not. And,
right.
You know, I think I'm more of like a, I don't know, that is just something, it's just a question that we ask ourselves.
Sure. Sure.
So, you know, stay tuned.
Yeah. Cause there's the Good Batch. There's Anna. Sometimes it's the same thing. Maybe sometimes it isn't. Who knows, right? Yeah.
Oh, exactly. For sure. And I don't want to offend. I don't want to polarize. But I'm also like, you know, there's just core values that we hold to be true. And it can be a bit, you know, the world's kind of a divisive place. So we have to see.
Yeah.
Well, clear.
Well, and with the diversity of your team, you can. There's probably an opportunity there to bring a lot of diversity into what you're making as well. Hey, which is part of the fun.
Absolutely.
Oh, so cool. So I guess I can't help myself. It's January. So I need to ask you, so like what 2023, and you said you're a goal, kind of a goal driven mm-hmm. person. What do you see for the bakery for the new 2023?
Year? Yeah. Well, we for the business. It's funny. It's so early in 2023 that my husband and I haven't even had our chance to like come together and have our big kickoff planning meeting. But the note that I think we're both.
That we're both bringing you're going to in position here is yeah
I'll tell all of our listeners here before I tell my husband. the things that we've been discussing, we definitely have an expansion. We're opening another it's not quite a full shop, but a bit of an outpost that I can't really go into detail yet. Sure. But stay tuned. But this spring we'll be opening something in Manhattan, which is really exciting. We've never done that. And then we want to use that to kind of piggyback into looking into possibly expanding into another bake shop, like a proper full bake shop, kind of mimicking what we have here in Clinton Hill. So that would be somewhere else in Brooklyn. So there's just the expansion for number one. One is on deck. And again, going back to like the lessons we've learned from expanding before are like front and center, so that we're making good decisions. Other goals, and this is again, I'm sure every business owner says this, but just simplifying, clearing clutter, so that my team can operate even smoother. We have a pastry chef on staff who's amazing, and I'm working with her so that she has a very clear long runway of what she's working on, and so that we can bring really cool, fun specials more seasonally into the mix, and working with our local farmers and the farmers market. And so just more timely and exciting specials is something that we're working on. I'm personally working on I have a personal goal of writing a cookbook. And
hey.
Yeah. I've taken a stab at it here and there, and it still hasn't come out, but I've learned a lot, and I think I now kind of have an understanding of like the pieces that I need to put together. So that's something that I'm working on, which is kind of a fun challenge in that I've always approached it from like this point of view of like, okay, I'm in my professional bakery here, and I'm going to share recipes to home bakers. And I've kind of realized over the past bit of time, like the disconnect there. And so now I'm actually baking more at home in my own kitchen and approaching things from that point, like a professional baker in a home kitchen, sharing with other mm-hmm. home bakers. So that's something that I'm going to be working on this year, which is exciting because it's new. That's definitely not something I've done really ever. Like, well, honestly, since I kind of like started the company, but I didn't have all this experience behind me. So working on that. And then another kind of personal goal in the writing vein is to just be writing more. I find that long walks in fresh air and writing and journaling help process, like you were saying, with the help you work through problems, work through issues, like that helps me. And so just being a little more disciplined about setting time for that practice.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we're kindred spirits in that. Absolutely. Oh yeah. That's a practice to recommend to lots of folks, I think.
Yeah. It's like helps get the thing out of the head. Cause I mean, yeah. I just can't, I'm so fed up with just letting ideas and that evolve into issues and then emotions and then to bad behavior, like just letting that rattle around. Yeah. And so I find that getting it down on paper is just a healthier.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just a shortcut.
Yeah. Yeah. The end point for me is when then the thing happens that you imagined 2 weeks ago, and you see someone else do it, or you see it happening and it's something that you could have avoided, like, you know, just because you didn't you know, you didn't get it down. You just, the thought came and it went. And then it's like, oh man, like I hate when that happens.
I know.
Well, okay. And then I guess one other question, just because I'm always fascinated by folks like you that have got the team in place and have been able to sustain, you know, over a long period of time. And in this day and age, through some serious ups and downs in the world, what's a typical day? What's a good day for you in the business now? What's it like?
For me personally?
Yeah. As sort of the leader of this thing that's bigger than yourself.
Cruise ship that we're on. A good day is I'm waking up before my kids. I'm getting my movement practice in. I got a little meditation under my belt. I get my kids up. There's minimal shouting. I drop them off at school. Everyone's happy. Kiss, kiss, kiss. And so then I get to the bakery. I live not too far. So I get into the shop and around 9 a.m. It used to be much earlier. And like, as I, you know, the more personal responsibility and family, like I just got pushed. I used to be in at like 6 a.m. and now it's 9 if I'm lucky. So I'm in at 9. I walk in, the shop's already been open for an hour. So there's customers in, I've got my happy baristas. They're, you know, jiving with their regulars. There's gorgeous scones in the pastry case. It's just, the shop looks great, right? Everything's stocked. I go through the swinging doors, and there's, at that point by 9 a.m., there's about 6 to 8 bakers in there, and everyone's kind of in their rhythm, like a quiet dance is happening. And, you know, I've got the cookies are going, I've got quick breads in the oven, I've got muffins being scooped, I've got someone printing invoices and reports, and everything's just going great. And we're not out of any ingredients. Everything's arrived on time, right? That's what I'm walking into is an ideal good day. And I like to walk around the kitchen. I like to check in with everyone on the team, whether it's a hi, hello, how's your son? Or like, hey, like, you know, that thing wasn't going, like, has there any updates? And so I just like to check in with everyone. I get a cup of coffee, come down to my office, unload. I usually put my clogs on, put a bandana on. Even if I'm not baking, I try and just do that kind of like shift gears. And then on an ideal day, I'm probably working on my own little R&D project. So maybe I spend an hour or two kind of like dialing in, tweaking, doing another batch of something. I'm also checking in maybe with my pastry chef on her own R&D. We're doing a tasting, that's happening. But meanwhile, you know, thousands of cookies are being baked and breads are being sliced, and the wholesale orders are starting to be packed. There's like 2 days a week where my husband and I are here on the same day. So we have a meeting and there's minimal bickering. We get along perfectly. That's also, you know, like it's just, oh, right to the agenda. No BS. So that would be great. Yeah. And then, you know, just all the admin, emails, the ordering, the things, and just training some new people that might be happening also. And then ideally by 4 o'clock, I'm wrapping up, and then I like to walk home, as I was saying, and it's an hour walk, and it's a really beautiful walk. I walk through the park, and I'm taking that hour to really like to digest the day, to organize, categorize everything, put it away neatly, so that I'm walking in my door at 5:30 and my kids are jumping in my arms, and you know, the rest is gravy. So that is an ideal day.
That's awesome
for me.
No, that's awesome. That's so cool to hear. My heart was just like soaring when, especially the image of you walking in and the team is just like clicking and they're all doing their thing. However, you know, and both the excited, talkative group, and then just that quiet, awesomeness in the back, and I don't know. I haven't really asked that question in ages, and I think I'm gonna challenge anyone who's listening to this to do the same exercise with your perfect day, and it'll be completely different. Completely. But it's like keep that in mind, right? Keep that close because that's like I love that. I really do. Because now you've got something to, you know, because and you might only get one out of 30 that's exactly like that.
That goes
someone's
like that.
Coming in or the thing blew up or, you know, whatever, but it's
at least we have that. And it's also nice to, I appreciate this exercise too, because it's important to, when that does happen, to appreciate it.
Yeah.
Right. And not, I think something that a goal, you know, going back to goals is that my husband and I kind of have, and it's, this is more coming from him. He's like, Anna, we need to work towards boredom. We should have more boring days, because boring days mean we're doing all the right things and nothing popped up. You know, we want the excitement. We want the opportunities. We don't want the blowout of the freezer, but like it happens. And so we want the boring days, and boring, you know, another word could be just routine, maybe. That should be the goal, and to appreciate it and not get, you know, when the routine, it can be, I think as business owners, we can get, we get too routine, when we get too in a groove, and just to remember, like, wait a minute, it's the whole goal to be working towards something, and this is the path that we're on.
Well, yeah, because, well, it, boy, that really dredged up a memory of mine. It's just that, you know, when we were fully staffed at Orange Boot, you know, I could actually do some things like you described, like come in and not be the first person in. You know, I could come in at 6:30 and not 4, and some of the bread had already be coming out or whatever. And I got into a bad habit of, well, now if I'm not troubleshooting, because I'm not baking, I have to contribute somehow. So I need to be troubleshooting. And because that's what I'm good at. But what if you have a day where there's nothing to troubleshoot?
There's no trouble.
You could call that a very good day. But in my mind, that was a bad. I wasn't contributing because nothing broke. That's like, wow. Yeah. I've never actually considered it like that. But that's exactly really when you're describing it. I went down a completely different path in my own heart. Yeah. It's so funny. Ah, okay. Well, I have to go for a walk and think about it now.
Contemplate that.
What does that mean?
You know. It's like this I did not make up this saying, but like you want to be working on your business and not for your business.
Totally.
And it's so comfortable and it's so easy to work for your business and to think, oh, if I'm not doing this, you know, like first of all, I can't be replaced. There's no one else in the world that can do this except for me, which is not true. It might be true that no one will do it as well as you or up to your standard, but it's certainly not true.
Or as cheaply.
Or as cheaply, for sure. Yeah, for sure. Or as quickly. But it's, yeah, you have to like always kind of have that like, oh, wait, what is my job here? Like, what am I supposed to be doing? What are the things that we're working towards? And I sometimes just have to like recalibrate when like the crisis goes away or whatever, you know, whatever 4:30 bake off that I was had maybe been doing, like, okay, I don't need to be doing that anymore. Like,
yeah,
wait, what do I do now? Yeah. where are we going?
totally so cool. Wow, well, thanks so much for doing this, Anna. This has been great to meet you. It's been a lot of fun.
Is there
anything that I missed that you were hoping I was going to get to?
Oh, no, I just want to say, so I can earn some cred with you, is that while I am a cookie baker, the pandemic kind of turned me into a little bit of a home baker with bread. So I've been loving exploring bread baking at home. And now that I kind of share bread with friends back in my own neighborhood and community, and they keep pushing me to like sell it. I'm like, there is no way I will ever sell this bread. That would take the, I know what bread baking is. And it's a completely different, I mean, it's a whole other set of equipment and tools.
You don't need to get any cred with me. You have massive cred. with me with everything that you're doing.
I wanted to expand our kindred spirits.
Oh, big time. I am, and I, the only thing I about my own bread expertise is just I've baked a lot of it. I wouldn't say I'm very good, but I bake it up with quantity.
Learn something.
you can't help but learn something if you do it for a long time. But it's,
I know.
It's pretty much every single baker of any kind that I've talked to. It's like, whoa, okay, I'm learning a lot here. So that's, maybe that's what I love about this craft. Whatever type of baking you're doing, mm-hmm. it's sort of like you're always learning. You're like, and even the teacher of all the teachers is still learning every day. So I love that. Yeah.
I hope so. I hope to never stop learning.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for this again. And yeah. I don't want to take too much of your time, but I really do appreciate you coming and having a chat and getting to know you a bit. I'm more intrigued than ever about your bakery. And I always say, oh, I'll come out and visit. I don't know. I was talking to friends of mine and I said, if I ever make it to Ontario in Canada again, it's going to be a year and a half before I get home, because once I get out east, just everybody I want to go see. But
a journey.
It's
a
good
journey.
To know,
well,
that
if
you're there.
Ever find yourself in Brooklyn and Clinton Hill, definitely come say hi. We'll be here. Make
right on. Thanks, Anna. Good
pleasure
to see you.
Speak with you. Take care.
Yeah.
Bye.
Well, that was excellent. What a great conversation. She is just excellent and amazing and full of life, and I love it. It was so much fun. We had a really good talk. A couple of things that stuck with me when I was listening to it for the second time. There were so many points in the conversation where I asked a question and she gave the answer, and it's triggered a whole bunch of memories for me and a whole bunch of thoughts that I wasn't expecting. And then we'd go off again. I love those kind of conversations. But when she was talking later in the talk about her sort of expansion plans in 2023, and it struck me at the time, and I didn't say anything, and then on re-listening, it really hit me again how, yeah, that's about right. You do something for 10 years plus, you kind of get it grooved, now you're ready to expand. And I just think back to the Orange Boot Bakery days where, you know, we were 6 months in and people were driving down from the north end of the city, which takes 10 minutes in Regina, but for them, it was a very long time. And they were like, when are you going to open another location in the north end so we don't have to drive so far? And I thought, my God, I'm still learning how to run this. How am I ever going to do a second location? And it was neat to talk to Anna, who's sort of in the position now, well, they got to kind of figure it out, and they know what they do and they know their thing. And so now it's time to look at doing an outpost, doing a second bake shop, that kind of thing. And I think maybe we put too much time pressure on ourselves to like, we got to do it now. So it's nice to hear someone saying, yeah, we tried some things and it didn't quite work, but we learned a lot. And now when we try it the second time, you know, it's going to work. And then just her description of the perfect day for her moved me. That's all I can say. I just thought it was beautiful. And I thought to myself on re-listening, you know, why don't we do that more? Why don't we all do that? I actually have done that for myself over the week since I talked with Anna, and just sat down and really thought through what is a good day for me. And then why wouldn't I try and have those good days and change things so that I can have more of those good days, the way that I'm visualizing it. And I think that we get so stuck in our minds of, this is the way things have to be. The way things are right now is the way it has to be, and they can't be changed. That taking some time, maybe having a cup of tea and thinking about, now what is a perfect day for me right now? And how can I get more like that? That's a good exercise. And so, you know, maybe my invitation to you over the next week is to maybe sit down and think about that. And hey, if you think about that, and if it you come up with something interesting, drop me a line with Mark with a K at riseuppod.com. I'd love to hear from you. Love getting emails. Until next week, when we have another show, there's going to be another show next week, number 181, which... you don't get a darts call for 181. I think it's impossible. Have a great week. work hard, bake lots, feed the people. Happy baking. Bye-bye.